Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, your host, and our focus is on mastering communication as an essential leadership skill so that you can command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal in any context. After over 200 episodes, we are a top 1% podcast globally, thanks to you. So if you love listening to these conversations as much as I love bringing them to you, please take 30 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating and review, or just go to the website ratethispodcast.com/influence and follow their super simple instructions. On with the show. My guest this week is Ekaterina, aka Katie Curry, a managing director of Millennial Specialty Insurance. Katie came to the U.S. at age 18 from Bulgaria with a suitcase and a dream. She got her MBA from Yale, has spent 25 years on Wall Street, and for the last 2 years is working in the insurance industry with Millennial. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Laura. Very pleased to be here.
Tell us a fun fact about you.
I love nature and hiking, and my goal is to visit all national parks in the U.S. I am about 20% in, and I've got a lot more to visit.
Oh, okay. What's your favorite park so far?
So far, it's Rocky Mountain in Colorado. Breathtaking hikes there, and I can't wait to go back.
What's the one that you're most excited to try someday? Where do you want to get to?
Ooh, I am going to visit Yellowstone at the end of this summer, and I'm very excited about that trip.
Well, you have to send us a postcard because I have never been there and I'm dying to go too. So I'll take your advice on how to approach next time when you get back.
Sounds like a plan.
Safe travels on that one. Now onto a different journey. Tell us about Millennial. What is your 30-second elevator pitch?
Sure. Millennial Specialty Insurance is one of the largest managing general agent, which is a broker that creates and distributes insurance products, a variety of different insurance products. I specifically focus in the renter's insurance business, and we help property owners, residents, property managers, leasing agents with their risk. We measure risk for them, and we create products to help reduce their risk. And we're part of a public company, the Baldwin Group. It's a public company listed on NASDAQ with about 4,000 people.
Wow, terrific. And in going from Wall Street to insurance, what's the most important leadership communication lesson that you had to learn, and how did you learn it?
That actually brings me back to an early career communication lesson that I had to learn. Okay. I was working at a large bank, and I was new out of college. It was my first job. And because I'm Eastern European, I was working with the Eastern European banks. Now, one of the banks in Armenia came to me, and they were inquiring, making an innocuous inquiry about a check. I had to investigate and see the check was $168,000.
Okay.
So I had to inquire about the check, check with the bank in California that the check was drawn on. What I did not know is that one of their clients had gone into the bank with armored vehicles and guards and had demanded that the check gets paid to him.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Now, quite an exciting story. Once I finished my investigation and replied to them using our secure system, I gave them a little bit of background on where we are with the check. But then at the end, we had a standard footer. And the standard footer read something like, I hope I've answered your question and I trust all is okay on your end now. They looked at that footer and understood that second part, I trust that all is okay on your end now, to mean that this case is now fine, it's closed, and you can pay the check out. So they actually paid cash, $168,000, which 25 years ago was a lot more. And that created a lot of issues and problems, both for me as well as for them. And just one phrase that can have such big impact and can be misinterpreted.
Yes. So put the pieces together here that I'm catching. Number one, the bank in Armenia said, can we cash this check? And the answer that you were trying to convey to them in the body of the email was no, effectively, or
that it's still under investigation and there's still a few more things that need to be done. So not yet.
Not yet. But because of the footer, hope everything's okay now, they went, but even with all those things, yeah, sure, go ahead, do what you want to do. And they did it. Yikes.
That's exactly what happened.
Oh my gosh. So the lesson learned was?
Precision in word choice really matters.
Yeah. And watch what we put in the footers. I mean, nowadays with email, everybody has everything automated. Most people don't even sign their own names. It's just a rubber stamp digitally, so to speak. Got to watch what we put in those little closings, meaning people can read into it.
Yeah, our signature, and make sure that we think about what impact it's going to have and how it can be misinterpreted.
Yes, and that's $168,000 worth of misinterpretation. In my world, that's an expensive mistake.
Very expensive mistake in my world as well.
And not one you want to have to learn twice. So definitely a good one to learn the first time around. Oh my gosh. So with all of that, tell me about your DISC profile or Strength Finders profile or Myers-Briggs. What's a personality type of assessment that you've taken? And how does that influence your communication style with others on your team or in your organization?
I've taken quite a few of them. I am a fan of Myers-Briggs, and that's kind of my favorite because it provides a lot of deep information and understanding yourself and others. Also, Strength Finder is very important for me. And what it's helped me understand is that a key skill, leadership skill that's needed is to be a translator between the C-suite and the people on the ground that are actually executing and doing the work. And so that translation of taking the high level vision of where we are going and why into, so what does that mean for me? And so what? And what should I be doing? That's a skill that I find very important. And I have people in my team who are able to do that. And, you know, I try to do that. But I also learned it's not one of those Myers-Briggs tests or DISC or StrengthsFinder, but I was part of a learning and leadership program with the Women Bond Club quite a few years ago.
Okay.
And it was a 6-month long program, executive coaching. And when I looked at their curriculum, what were they teaching? They were teaching how to communicate, what's your communication style, how to have difficult conversations, how to build relationships, what's the balance between content and style. Ultimately, they were trying to teach me to become a leader that's powerful enough to be heard, but charismatic enough to be followed.
What a great space. So say that one more time. Become a leader who?
Who is powerful enough to be heard and charismatic enough to be followed.
I love that. And what does that mean to you?
I think it means that I need to be a leader, and we all need to be leaders who have flexibility in how we communicate. We can do situational leadership and situational communication, and we can use what we learn from Myers-Briggs and DISC and others to actually adapt to our audience and adapt to our clients and to people on our teams.
That's amazing. I hope everybody caught that piece there. I'm going to say it one more time. What I heard was the importance of the balance between being a leader who's powerful enough to be heard and charismatic enough to be followed. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Amazing. Amazing. Great takeaways with that. Now, tell me about an opportunity that you missed because you held back. Why did you hold back? And if you could have a do-over, what would you do differently?
I missed an opportunity that was when I had just taken on a new role. And I was presenting, I had an opportunity to present to a room full of leaders who I didn't know very well. But I knew that I was bringing operational metrics, or I like to call them juicy insights. These are insights that will help them run their business better that were not presented to them in the past. But the reason why I missed the opportunity is because I was so nervous. I was worried about my accent. I was worried about being, you know, an immigrant and whether they'll be able to understand me, that I rushed through this presentation. I tried to just get to the point, get to the bottom line. I did not set the stage very well. And I especially missed the impact portion. I missed the so what. So what does that mean? And, you know, when I finished this presentation, it was like, okay, next, you know, there was no impact. So what happened is my boss actually pulled me over and said, Katie, I need to talk to you. There were several things that you missed here. The first is you need to remember what is the goal of every conversation or every presentation. One goal is to exchange information, but there is also need for call to action. Or the so what. And then there are two other goals. And one is, what does this conversation or this presentation say about you, your brand, and how you're perceived? And then how does this conversation or this presentation build the relationship and establish rapport? And so thank you to my previous boss who actually helped me figure this out. And I had an opportunity to do a do-over a little bit later.
Oh, good.
and I had to make some tweaks, but it was a much better reception. And actually, people in that room started asking me, oh, you know, share these metrics with me again. Well, can you share this other department's metrics with me? And we created a bit of a competition, and we created a bit of excitement around the topic that could have been very boring, but had real impact on business.
How exciting. And boy, kudos to your boss. How great that she took you aside and just, she didn't yell at you for it. She just said, here's what you need to do. Here's where you're going to go from as good as it was to great, or at least better, more impactful. And she just spelled it out and you were able to fill in the blanks and you did it. Kudos to you for taking the opportunity and just not deferring it and saying, no, let somebody else do it. They'll do it better. But you said, no, I'm going to do this better. And you did. You followed her advice and you nailed it.
Well, I'm sure many people would have done it much better than me, but you know, growth mindset. We go back and we do hard things and we try again.
Yes.
That's what I did.
That's exactly what it's about, is if you don't learn from your mistakes, then it's a failure.
Exactly.
And it sounds like you learned a great lesson moving forward. Tell me about a time when you decided to take a big risk. What was at stake and how did you communicate that decision to key stakeholders?
So this was around the beginning of COVID, when we had so much uncertainty and there was so much turbulence in the market, especially in financial markets. At that time, I was leading a very creative team, ghostwriters, editors, ex-journalists, translators, and we had an opportunity. It was me, but also the company, to make a decision whether we want to stay silent and have a wait and see approach, or whether we were going to have a point of view, go to the market, present data, present insights, present what we think and how COVID and the uncertainty of COVID and all that it entails is actually impacting fixed income markets.
So the question is whether or not you would have a voice that you wanted to share publicly as an institution about your projections related to COVID when COVID originally hit, or whether just to stay quiet.
Yes, whether to stay quiet or whether we would put forth publicly our insights, our data, and our point of view, not so much about COVID and when COVID is going to end, more so on how it's impacting various clients of ours that we're responsible for.
Okay.
So working with this creative team, we had to be quite smart about how we do that because we were still just developing our point of view. And we also had to be very precise about the words we used.
Of course.
Now, do we use the word crisis? Do we use the word pandemic?
Yes.
Do we use the word epidemic? What is the right word and what connotation does it have? And thankfully, you know, the editors and the writers, they helped, and with guidance from the rest of the company and communications department, we figured out how to do that. As for me, every time when I spoke with that team, I was always nervous about my punctuation and my grammar and when I spoke to them. But in this case, we took the risk. And that's exactly what the market wanted to hear from us.
They wanted your input. They wanted your insights.
They wanted the insight. Yes, they sought the insights. Our engagement skyrocketed on the website. Our reports got read more so than probably ever before.
Mm. I'm curious, why would the organization think that the clients would not want your insights?
Clients always want the insights, but we were not sure if we are ready to offer the insights. Mm-hmm. And we were nervous about having a clear point of view.
Sure.
Because there was so much uncertainty at that point, especially with a large organization where what you say can actually influence companies and have really big impact.
Right.
You know, typically you tend to be a bit conservative.
Sure. The word is the pebble that gets dropped in the pond, but the ripple effects are far reaching for sure. Understand wanting to be conservative in what you say for fear of the magnitude of the impact. That makes a lot of sense. I think this is a good opportunity to shift into a little bit of a challenge, not for you, but for our listeners out there. So I invite you, Katie, to levy our 24-hour influence challenge, where you'll challenge the audience to take one step that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence. How would you like to challenge our listeners today?
I want our listeners to think about the when of communication. And I spent many years earlier in my career where when an email came to me, whether it was a Slack message, a Teams message, an email, I responded as quickly as possible. It came, I was playing ping pong, and I tried to respond.
Sure.
I'm learning and I learned that communication is a much more strategic activity. And it's not just the words and the content that matters, but the when matters as well. Mm-hmm. And so I would like our listeners to think about three buckets in terms of how they communicate.
Okay.
There's some critical things that need to be responded to right away. This is the ASAP bucket. Now, there's the other bucket, which is the ALAP. This is responding as late as possible. And that's when you want to give your team members or others to actually provide insight. And, you know, you can be the decision maker, you respond at the end. And then there's my favorite bucket, which is the NMFP bucket.
Uh-oh.
And this is the not my blank problem. And this is the bucket that you should never respond to. You may be copied on it, but it has nothing to do with you, or, you know, you're not the critical decision maker there. You should just leave those alone and train people not to send them to you in the future.
Yes. I think that's a really good one. When is it not your problem to be able to go into and just to say, you know what, I could weigh in on this, but I'm not going to. There are those, of course, who should go in the other direction and need to weigh in a bit more instead of just leaving everything to others. But yeah, being able to just hold back and abdicate and say, you know what, I'm going to leave this one to the others in whatever space.
Delegate.
Yes.
Delegate versus abdicate.
Yes. I like that better. Allow somebody else to take responsibility for it, give them that power and opportunity. Now, what about a communication skill that you weren't born with and had to learn? What was that and how did you learn it?
Well, I look at people in two ways of communication. Some people remind me of classical pianists. Classical pianists, they follow their notes, they play the music, they do practice, and it comes out very well. And others are jazz pianists. They are very good on their feet. They are creative. They, you know, maybe in business development and sales and client success, they're great on the spot. I was not born being a jazz pianist. Mm. I am a classical pianist. Mm. And so what I had to learn, and I still continue to learn, is how do you bring insights and value and how do you respond on the spot? And especially if you are nervous, if you're with people you don't know, and if you are in a situation that's maybe challenging. You know, there's not one way to do it.
Sure.
But I think what I've done to help myself is put myself in situations like that more frequently so I get more comfortable with that.
Sure.
I've asked people to be my feedback buddy.
Hmm.
So, you know, listen to me and then let me know what can I do better next time. And then the last one is just copy other people that are really good at it. And, you know, when you see someone who is a jazz pianist and is able to just on the spot respond, it's like, okay, what are they doing? Maybe I can adopt that.
Sure. And you know, just to stick with the metaphor, jazz has rules as well. It's not like it's just a total free-for-all, but that notion of the ability to improvise.
Yes.
And to create on the fly is a definite skill set that, musically speaking, I would certainly like to learn. And it's absolutely one that we need to be able to respond in real time in conversation as well. So I love that analogy.
Mm-hmm. And I think it comes with practice and it comes with confidence as well. So I know for me, being Eastern European and having an accent, it took me a while to actually kind of embrace that and embrace that this is part of who I am. And I hope I'm going to do my best so people can understand me, but not get held back by my accent.
Right. And not hold yourself back just because there's one.
Especially not hold myself back. Yes, exactly.
Yes. And that's part of the two-way dance as well. So great little conversation to have with yourself, pep talk to have as well, decide to just not hold back. Now, tell me about a time when you went to bat for someone else. Who did you speak to on their behalf and why and how?
I had someone on my team who was fantastic and had a very specific skill. She was able to look at data and just turn it into stories and turn it into insights and value. But she was extremely quiet, very introverted, very shy, very polite. And she had been passed over for promotions. She had been passed over for pay raises. Mm. And she had a real dislike of company politics and showcasing her work. And she avoided talking to people. She avoided even networking within the company. So I had to go to bat for her to get her promoted. And it was quite a challenge because people looked at me and said, what do you mean you want to promote her? She's been doing this job for a while. She's adequate, but that does not necessitate and does not mean that she needs to be promoted. And really, we also don't know her very well. She just sits there in the corner. So what I had to do, so this was a conversation with leadership and my people partners and, you know, a variety of finance and other decision makers. What I had to do, because I couldn't showcase her, I showcased her work. And I said, yes, she's quiet and she hides there and she's in the corner. But you have heard her work. You maybe have used her work. And this is the value that she brings. And we actually need a lot more of that. Mm. And we need to reward and develop this type of talent. So it took a while. I was not successful the first time in the first promotion cycle. It took me two promotion cycles. And the second time I did it is I paid a lot more attention to all her output. And I was her microphone or her advocate.
Yes.
And of course, I also coached her. And I said, look, you know, gone are the days when the work just speaks for you.
Yes.
Now, you know, in almost all companies, that is table stakes. You should do good work. But in addition, you need to create the relationships. You need to build the rapport. And you need to make sure that your work, people associate you with your work.
Absolutely. That's become such a refrain with so many clients lately where there's the argument, but my work should speak for itself. And I always say, yes, your work does speak for itself. It just doesn't speak for you. And when all people know about you and who you are is the tasks that you can complete, then the message that it transmits is that that's exactly what you should keep doing, those tasks that you're good at completing, not that you should be given more, not that you should move up, not that whatever. So she was so lucky. I hope she appreciates that you were able to go to bat for her, that you saw more in her. And I think that's so important as leaders to look at our people and be able to see into them. And I presume you had a conversation with her and she did genuinely want additional opportunities. It's not that she was happy, content, and just desired to stay put. She did actually want more opportunity.
Yeah, she absolutely wanted the opportunity and she's been expecting that the opportunity would come to her and tap her on the shoulder because of the good work that she was producing.
Yes.
And I think that this is also, as leaders, part of how we communicate is, you know, the guidance that we provide for our people and kind of setting reality for them. And I've had many times where my leaders have set reality for me. It's like, okay, your expectations, just they may be outdated, they may be unrealistic, and there are other things that are required now. I love that flexibility, the flexibility in leadership and the flexibility in communication and the growth mindset, where you kind of take a look at yourself and you say, okay, yeah, that's right. I fell short here. And I'm going to try again.
I think that's beautiful. Yes, getting up and just trying one more time, but and recognizing, because I think there are also people out there who don't want more and where organizations feel like, no, you have to keep moving upward. If you're stagnant, then after a while, it's time for you to go because you're not continuing upward. And if somebody's happy where they are, leave them be. They're producing perfectly for you. Why is this an issue?
Exactly.
So who knows?
Yeah, exactly. And that reminds me actually of when I was in business school, I heard a number of leaders that spoke about their approach to leadership and communication. One said, you know, when things are easy, I create pressure for my people. When the market is easy, the economy is easy, I create a lot of pressure for them. But when things are tough in the economy, in the market, I just let them be. And I used to look and think, what a jerk. I don't want to work for him. But then I have come to realize that this is exactly, you know, it is the pressure that breaks pipes, but it also builds diamonds.
Yes.
And we need it.
Yes. And I think it makes sense in that when things are tough, the pressure will present itself. People don't need you to add more to it. Just let them deal with the challenges that come and they'll grow and they'll learn and et cetera. And then to add a little extra challenge during those rest periods. Not to say never let people breathe, let them have some downtime to an extent, but yeah, I think that's an important balance to, and It also shows some emotional intelligence to recognize when your people need you to back off because they're dealing with extra pressure versus when it's time to galvanize a little bit more.
Absolutely.
All right, Katie, last but not least, finish the sentence for me. I wish I was better at explaining what to whom.
Oh, I wish I was better at explaining how life works to my teenage kids.
Ah.
And I'm finding that teenage audiences can be very challenging. They have very strong points of view, especially when their parents are trying to explain something that they're not ready yet to learn. It's quite a task.
Yes. And I think that is something that transcends culture and national origins and generations, that teenagers typically have a rather strong opinion and view of the future. And it's very hard to take that kind of advice from mom and dad, to say the least.
Yes. Yes. Although I have to say I'm very fortunate. I love my kids.
Yes. I think it was Mark Twain who said, when I was 17, I thought my father was an idiot. And when I was 21, I was amazed by how much he'd learned.
Yes. He learned a lot over those 4 years.
So we gain perspective as we grow. But I'm very happy for you that you've got such a great relationship with your kids as well. All right, Katie, thank you so much for joining us today. I have loved every minute of this conversation. How can people learn more about you and your company?
Well, they can find me on LinkedIn, and I welcome people to connect with me on LinkedIn. And they should check out Millennial Specialty Insurance, our website, and the Baldwin Group. We have opportunities for people and roles where we are hiring for, and they're great places to work, and you should come join us if there is a role for you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that invitation, and thanks for joining us today, Katie.
It's been great to talk to you today, Laura. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody else, for tuning in today. As always, be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you love this show, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your platform of choice so we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And of course, if you're not sure how to do that, as I mentioned before, go to ratethispodcast.com/influence. And finally, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.